My name is Josh Jaram. I'm the founder of Align Growth Management. We're a growth marketing firm helping launch and scale seven-figure and eight-figure e-commerce brands.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
All right, Josh, we got a variety of topics to cover today. I'm going to start in probably the most unorthodox one, right? We're not even going to talk about your business to start. Like when we got connected to go and actually start bringing you on for the show, it was around the basis of you tweeted, you know, looking for jump on some podcasts, happy to chat about e-com in 2022, bankruptcy, influencer marketing, and private jets. The private jet part caught my eye probably more so than the other ones. Do you own private jets? Are you just constantly riding them, or do you just have a fascination with them?
No. So, I mean, I have a fascination with them. So last year I got to be on a private jet twice, and it was the first time that I'd ever been on a private plane. And I don't know, it was just kind of like the most amazing experience. One of the most amazing experiences that I've ever had, not because it was like super luxe and like we were just like drinking champagne and eating caviar on this plane, but just because it's kind of like, I always tell people it's kind of like when you turn 16 and you can finally like drive yourself somewhere on your own. That's kind of like the feeling of riding on a private jet, because when you get to the FBO, you basically are just, you just go to a small FBO and then like the pilot comes up to you and they're like, are you Josh? And you're like, yeah, I am. And you're like, awesome, right this way. And then you just get on the jet and you leave.
That's like, amazing.
You know what I mean?
And what's an FBO?
That's basically like the private jets, terminal.
How did these come about? Like what's the backstory between even getting on them?
Yeah. So, this is funny. So I married into a wealthy family. And so,
everyone's talking about starting an agency, build a SaaS company. You want to get rich quick, marry into a wealthy family.
That's right. Yep. Exactly. Well, how do you think I came out of bankruptcy? No, just kidding. I married into a wealthy family, and, one was for going to Thanksgiving with my extended family. One was for flying home from Los Angeles back to Nashville. And so, yeah, basically that was my in. And it was honestly just like an amazing experience being able to like hop on the plane without going through security. It's like, you know, like a small jet. So it's like maybe six seats. So it's not like I'm like in a super deluxe, you know, Drake sized private, you know, PJ. I don't know. I always just like, whenever I've flown on them, I've made sure to share it on Twitter just because it's funny, and I'm definitely not paying for it. So I just want to give that disclaimer.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Privy. They are the number one most reviewed app on the Shopify App Store and a necessity if you want to grow your e-commerce business. Now, before I started using Privy on all of my Shopify stores, I was seeing maybe a 1% conversion rate because I was spending so much time and money driving traffic to my store and not capturing any customer information. And after Privy, that all changed. Now my store converts at 3% plus, sometimes in the holidays, even as high as 5 or 6%. And it's because Privy helps me capture customer emails on my site and then allows me to go and actually use email flows to remind them to finish their purchase. So now I'm not just burning money on Facebook and Google ads. If you run an e-commerce store today, you literally cannot afford to not be using Privy. Head on over to privy.com/next generation for your free trial today.
I haven't flown private yet, but I had this crazy experience at like the very beginning of COVID where everyone was like not flying at all. And so you walk into it, like, you know, call me an asshole, but like I definitely flew way more than I probably should have during COVID. And nobody was in the airport at all. Like arguably one of the safest places to be during COVID because no one was there. And so probably like 30 days after, like call it like very beginning of April, right? So you're like 1 month into COVID and this is like peak lockdown. I had to go and fly back. I want to say I flew from Miami to Boston was the route I had to take. And I fly that quite often because of family and I went to school up in Boston before. And I had like a 7 a.m. Monday morning flight. So I got on the flight and I look around, I'm boarded. And they're like, all right, we're all boarded. I look around, I was like, dude, I'm the only person on this plane. I was like, no, like I'm flying a 737 right now and no one's on this plane except for me and like five flight attendants. I was like, why did they not just pay me like, you know, $5,000 to not take this flight or something ridiculous? So the entire flight, it was just like me, them. We were just like laughing, joking about like they're like, I've never seen anything like this before. And then, like I said, I fly this route quite a bit. And so I took that same route, like, I want to say like a year later, but I remember the flight attendant that I was chatting with for like 3 hours because it's a long flight. And I was like, hey, like, I don't know if you remember me, like, you know, COVID flight, whatever. She's like, Connor? And I was like, oh my God. And keep in mind, this is another 7 a.m. Monday morning flight. I don't know why I kept on booking those flights, but she's like, wait here. She's like, red or white wine? I was like, I guess I'll like have a drink. She just comes back with a full bottle of wine. And I was like, okay, like this, I feel like I'm getting the private experience on like a $73 American Airlines ticket. So definitely goals one day to upgrade to the next level.
And I feel like you just can't beat the ability to drive there and leave right away, right? Like I'm looking I'm going to New York tomorrow, and it's between like an Amtrak ticket, which is more expensive than flying.
Yeah.
It takes me so much longer if I got to fly there, even though the flight's, I don't know, 30 minutes, but you got to go, security, whatever. So one day. Josh, in terms of your background, how do we get from blankets to agency to kind of all the stuff you're doing? Where's the origin story of Josh?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I guess it kind of starts in like 2014-ish. I was in school. I had just read The 4-Hour Workweek, as a budding entrepreneur does.
The gateway drug.
Yeah, followed up by Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, it's like one of those two books that just gets you into the game, right?
So cliche, but everyone's read it, and I think it changed it. Like, it works.
Yeah, I know. I'm like reading about Tim Ferriss and just like hiring VAs to run his 8-figure e-com brand. I'm like, this stuff is so easy. Like, you know, I should just do all this. I wish I had read that book maybe in 2009. I probably would have been a lot better off, maximized Facebook ads while they were prime. But anyways, I basically was in school and I was a full-time student and I was a track athlete in college. And so I basically just didn't have time to get a normal job. And so what I ended up doing to basically pay the bills and get gas and, you know, take my girlfriend at the time out to dinners was I would like flip iPhones on eBay. And so that was kind of my side hustle. I'd go on like Facebook buy sell trade pages and also on you know, Craigslist, and I would just like go find broken iPhones and then I'd sell them on eBay for like $200 more. And so that was my hustle. I kind of figured out, I read The 4-Hour Workweek, wanted to get into e-com. My mom was actually using these heavy blankets for her most anxious clients for her therapy practice. She told me about it and then she was like, I think that we could sell these. I was like, yeah, we should definitely sell these. And I put it on a Facebook page, like a Facebook group, and sold like $1,500 off of one post. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And so, you know, from there, I mean, I can kind of save you the details, but we started employing refugee women in Nashville to sew these weighted blankets as a social enterprise. And we basically just started hustling. And so then I hired a coach, taught me how to run Facebook ads, built a Shopify store.
Sir, what does that mean? You hired a coach, like found a course online or something like that, like kind of guru-esque, but like actually knew what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of shady. Like, you know, it was like in those Facebook ad buyer groups and they're like posting screenshots of their stuff in that group. And like, I got on a call with them and like, we had been selling blankets for maybe about 7 or 8 months. So we had like 10 grand in the business account. And this coaching was like 5 grand. I was like, holy crap, 5 grand. This is gonna be crazy. Paid him the 5 grand, but then we went from like 10 grand a month to like 50 in just like overnight. But he just like kind of showed me how to run Facebook ads, you know, back in 2015, right?
Basically, like to hate it.
Yeah. So it's kind of off to the races from there.
So when you're actually starting this stuff, so now at this point, okay, we've kind of established the product and manufacturing. You've got refugee women, you said down in Nashville, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So like the product there, like you finally figured out, okay, cool. Facebook's going to be like the platform where I'm going to go to start distributing all of this stuff. Like talk me through what it took to kind of get from, hey, I just sold this thing one time to now I'm selling it 100 times a day. Because I think like we've had a ton of people here before and the people who listen to this kind of show are very much so in that I am just getting started bucket. And so I want to figure out like let's save them and save other people who are maybe more experienced, like the YouTube tutorials that are easy to look up. Like most YouTube tutorials talk about how to go and set up your Shopify store, how to make your product listing, how to like set up that Facebook ad, right? But there's very little content around there around scaling to something that's doing $6 million a year, because candidly, that applies to like the less than 1% of all people who ever start anything. So what kind of things were you doing to actually take it from just this idea that I can sell one a day to selling hundreds a day?
Yeah, good question. So, I mean, a big part of that was just the product itself. And so when we started, it was funny, like now everyone and their mother sells weighted blankets, and I can get into that in a little bit. But when we first started, the blanket was really custom for like kids with like ADHD, with sensory processing disorder. And so all the blankets were made custom. So like it would be custom to their body weight, custom dimensions, custom fabric. And so from the very beginning, we actually started meeting like people at Joann's Fabric, like here in Franklin, Tennessee, to like go get the fabric that they wanted, get the custom dimensions. And so we actually just standardized those sizes to three different sizes, like a 10-pound blanket, a 15-pound blanket, and a 20-pound blanket, all the same length. And we also only offered like eight different fabric options. And so by consolidating that down, we're able to help standardize that manufacturing and not have to do as much customization. And then from there, you know, like, I mean, with scale, we broke things, right? And so we started out with having each like refugee employee sewing it in their home, which was called cottage industry manufacturing at the time. And from there, like the volume kept getting bigger and bigger. And so like even Christmas 2016, we did about six figures from my parents' garage. Like it was wild. Like UPS was like bringing in these huge trucks to come to my parents' residential neighborhood. I had, you know, all these huge semi trucks coming in to bring us like fabric and like the beads that weighed down the blanket. It was so wild. And so from there, it was just like finding a facility, you know, setting up shop. And like,
Josh, sorry to interrupt, but like, how old are you when this was all happening?
So I started it when I was 20.
Okay. So yeah. Were you in college at the time or did you not go to college?
I was in college at the time. So I guess 2015 was when it started. 2016 was really when we started scaling. So like 2016, we did about $500,000 in sales. 2017, I graduated that May and we did about 2.3.
Okay, cool. And then did you scale up beyond that the following year?
Yep. So then 2018, we hit $6.5 million.
Damn. Okay. So at this point now, you're kind of like firing on all cylinders. And I want to clarify too, like when you're talking about like you learned all these Facebook ads, right? Like I know you do a lot of influencer work now. And I think a lot of brands are starting to think about influencers in terms of like creating better content and in terms of like diversifying where their revenue comes from and kind of trying to tap into some more of that organic stuff. Were you doing any influencer marketing at the time? Or is it like, nope, like CPMs are so goddamn cheap on Facebook. We are just going to keep on running these ads and it's just a profit machine.
Yeah, it was kind of the latter. So we didn't do a ton of influencer marketing. I honestly shot a lot of high, like really, I don't know what the right word is. I was about to say high definition, but that's a terrible. Like we basically did a lot of like high-end videography, like shot in Nashville. So like I would actually write all the scripts with like more of a direct response type play for copywriting. And we would go and I would do like a full day shoot with like five or six different actors. And we'd shoot like testimonial videos. We do like really beautiful imagery. Cause that's what kind of like differentiated us on the ads at that point. Cause everything else was like so kiddie. It was like kind of more for, you know, like I said, kids that had sensory processing disorders, but we were really going for adults with anxiety and insomnia. And so, yeah, that's kind of how we started scaling up, was really through like the creative that we were building out custom. And then obviously building out the team in Nashville to be able to like, be able to fulfill on all that demand.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. And this is going to be the really obvious question. I've just never done it before. So I'm curious how you do it. Like when you're hiring professional actors for this stuff, is it like I'm going on a Craigslist and I'm saying like what I want, or do you go through like talent agencies?
Yeah. So we actually did it through the videographer that we use. So he kind of had a lot of the connections for talent. And then he would kind of send us like their headshots and like whoever we wanted to use. And so we just made sure to have, you know, tons of different types of demographics and, you know, kind of our core audience.
Were you guys profitable?
It's a good question. So yes and no. So like in 20, 17. So when we did like 2.3, we cleared like almost 400K in profit on the 2.3. The problem was is in 2018, just like all cash, we were profitable like for the first 6 months of that year. And then basically sold out of inventory. And we were like investing all that cash into inventory. And so the cash got locked up into inventory. And that's really when this kind of death, the death cycle is what I like to call it, started. And so what happened was I had actually used a line of credit in that business to help fund inventory when that happened, because sales came down when we sold out of product. We knew that we were going to have a big Q4 windfall, right? Because that's like big gifting season. And so we started funding inventory with debt. And that's kind of like why things got super hairy in 2019 for us, because of that cash flow cycle.
So, but what would you have done differently? I guess. And so like, let's fast forward a second, actually, I guess. Like, I know something you feel comfortable talking about, and I know it's like an uncomfortable thing at the time, but like, you guys ended up filing for bankruptcy for that business to try to go and actually eradicate some of the debt that you had on the balance sheet, right?
Right. Yeah. So,
like, I'd love to get a better understanding, and we'll dive deeper into that and like how that was, et cetera. But I'd love to kind of get a better understanding too of like financing inventory with debt, is a somewhat normal practice in e-commerce. Totally. And so like, I know plenty of people who like, they have such a negative cash conversion cycle that like, ultimately they just go and they start borrowing money to go and pay for it. And you know, the risk there being, if you don't sell that inventory, then you're kind of having some issues. Someone we've had on this podcast almost more than a year ago now, at this point, I think it was, Aaron Spivak, right? He ran a weighted blanket company up.
Hush.
Yeah. So he ran a weighted blanket company up in Canada. I know, John Fiorentino just sold his company, to the whole Wind brand group. They do gravity blankets and stuff. Like, when you're reflecting on this kind of stuff, is it that like the debt was what got y'all, or is it like the fact like, I don't know, I guess I'll turn the mic over to you and kind of see it from your perspective, like on why things might've not worked out.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of it has to do with just how our foundation was set up, like the foundation of the company. So like, for one, like we were, the way I was making weighted blankets was kind of like I was making blankets in the ice age. And so like, it was so funny, like towards the end of that business, I started getting all these emails from like manufacturers in China, and they would be like hitting me up and just showing me videos of them like making these weighted blankets in like an automated machine where they just like put the fabric in and then it's like finished by the time it's like comes out of the machine. And I was like, oh shit, like I have really messed up here. And so that's kind of like, honestly, one of the biggest things that like ended the business and why we like chose to end it, right? Was because like at that point, the only differentiator that we had in the marketplace was because we were employing the refugee women. And so, and like, that was something like we really cared about. Like, we were doing paid English classes on site and just providing a sustainable source of income that would help these families, you know, get into new neighborhoods, they're able to buy homes and just have, you know, provide for their families. But sadly, that was kind of the thing that like ended us, because, you know, when Target basically came out with their own weighted blanket towards the end of 2018, and they cut our prices by almost 70%. And so that was like a killer. That was killer, because, you know, I was making these blankets for $60 or $70. And then selling them for $200, and that was like the margin. Whereas Target was selling them for $60 or $70, like at our cost.
And when you were getting reached out to by some of these Chinese suppliers, were they quoting you, like saying that like, we can make this for $25 or something?
Yeah, they were like, this is going to be $12.
Wow. Okay. So basically they said, we'll shave off 80% of your costs. And then, you know, like at that point too, right? Let's say you kept the $199 price point, like you have 95% margins.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. But like, that's when things started to tank too. So it was kind of a timing thing where the market just kind of shifted underneath us almost too fast for us to make that pivot.
And yeah. I think also, in terms of demand side, in terms of people buying or competition or.
Yeah. Demand and competition. So like the competition had already started cutting our prices. And as soon as Target had launched that blanket, there was like 30 more competitors all of a sudden. Like we had been tracking like maybe, you know, 7 or 8 that were like really big ones. So like think about Gravity, think Hush was in there at one point. I think they kind of came later in the game, but really like we just saw the whole market started to cut their prices and all of a sudden our ROAS started to drop. I was like locked into a $20,000 a month lease at the time for our manufacturing facility. And so there was just like a lot of things that we had just like set up that was just stupid. Like that we should have never done in the first place. But I was, you know, 21 or 22 at the time. So I was like too dumb and naive. All I was like really thinking about was making this marketing machine work. Right. And so besides just like setting up from like an employment standpoint, I think the second big component there was just not evolving the product. And so you can kind of count that with the COGS and stuff like that, but also just the product didn't evolve past that first core product. So there was a lot, there wasn't many like returning customers. I think we just had like a 9% returning customer rate because like once you need one weighted blanket, who needs a second one, right?
Right, then it becomes a little bit tougher.
Yeah, so like, you know, I've seen a lot of other weighted blankets do this well of like making pillows and eye masks and essential oil diffusers and all that fun stuff around sleep. And like, we never evolved because I was just really trying to scale that first product. And I scaled basically one product to 6.5 million. Like it was all the products that we had were basically just different versions of that core product. And so that was big. And then lastly, just, you know, financially, you know, I had personally guaranteed a bank line. And so like, I think the other idea there is just that if we were going to continue down this road, like we were going to have to outsource all of our product to China either way, but I didn't really want to continue with the business at that point where I was like so burnt out. And, you know, if I really wanted to, you might as well file bankruptcy on that business and start a new business without that debt. And so that those kind of three things really killed us ultimately, with just like poor management and being a novice.
Probably the best time though to ever actually go bankrupt if you got to pick one, right? Like early 20s, you know, you don't really have, I'm assuming, no kids and wife, and like, you know, the I feel like it's at least easier to bounce back from that, but probably still like, I don't know. That's got to be a really rough experience to kind of sit down and make that decision. Was there like a day where it was like, hey, this isn't working anymore, and you had to, you know, make the decision on what's next, or was it kind of just a culmination of like just adding up every day?
Oh yes, there was a day. There definitely was a day that where it all kind of like fell apart. And so, I mean, it was really, you know, the combo of for 6 months, like I had 2 weeks of cash in our bank account at a time. So like every 2 weeks, I was like running a promo sale to our email list, trying to come up with more revenue just to keep the lights on. And I lived like that for like 6 months. It was terrible. And so basically we just consulted with a bankruptcy lawyer and he basically said, you know, we kind of had started to develop a second product that we thought was kind of going to be differentiated. It was basically, you know, it had the weight component, but it was like a lot thinner and not as like bulky as a lot of the weighted blankets out there. And he basically told us, he was like, well, you know, if you really believe in this product, then you shouldn't stay in this business with this amount of debt. Like you should, if you actually believe in this product, you should file bankruptcy and then, you know, roll this product up into that new business. And that was kind of it for us, you know.
How does that actually work from a technical side? So you have, I'm assuming you had like an LLC,
yeah,
or some sort of corporation that had to file. But now if you're personally guaranteeing everything, you just have to file personally as well?
Yeah. So everything was personal. Nothing was through the business, actually.
And so it kind of screws you up for 5 years, right? Or 7 years, or what's the time frame there?
Yeah, it's like 5 to 7 years. And so now I guess it's been almost 3 or 4 at this point.
If it makes you feel better, not that I think you need to feel better, but like 3 out of every 10 millionaires declare bankruptcy. So like you got yours out of the way early, which is actually really good.
Totally. Yeah. I was actually just my father-in-law, he's like a super successful guy. And he had told me the same story. It was like someone basically called his bank line just out of the blue back during like a small recession back in the day. And Yeah, and now he's well on his feet. So yeah, well, it was. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I appreciate you sharing that story with us, because honestly, like, I feel like part of the issue with this podcast sometimes is it's just like people get on, you're like, oh shit, here's this 25-year-old kid and he's like crushing it. Yeah, just like crushing it at life, like 80 million in sales. And then, and like, I don't know, I just don't think most people get to hear these stories, because right now, even where you're at today, you're running a really successful agency and working with some of the biggest brands in the space. And so like, you're doing really cool stuff. And even Waiting Comforts as a blanket brand, like, you literally sold over $6 million per year at the age of, like, I don't know what it was, like 24, I gotta imagine then, right? Something like that.
At that point, by the end, I was like 24.
Yeah. So like 24 years old and selling over $6 million a year, like, people love those headlines, but like very rarely see like the downside of doing some of this kind of stuff. So I don't know. I personally find that like being totally open about that stuff actually helps that whole, like, oh God, I'm going to say the name, but like the next generation of entrepreneurs, you know what I mean? We're like, I don't know. Like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like, the fact is sometimes you're just going to go and kind of get like kicked in the gut and like have to file for bankruptcy. Like, it's something that happens. But the fact is, like, I guess maybe now is actually probably a good time to transition. Like, what did it look like for like those 6 months after that? And like, did you just go and get a job and kind of say like, hey, entrepreneurship's not for me for a while? Or did you say like, nope, I'm just on to the next one?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, it was kind of a weird time because, you know, you can start the bankruptcy process, but you really have to like wait it out until you're officially declared bankrupt, because your creditors can come after you. And they can also start to tie, you know, any of your previous debts to your future earnings. And so my lawyer basically wouldn't allow me to start anything new or even to get a job for 3 months after that process. So basically from May to June, July, like August or September, I wasn't allowed to work. And so,
Xbox all day?
So basically, I mean, I literally like just would wake up with like, also, I'll also tell you, like, I didn't get paid for 9 months. So I was like living off any cash that I had made, you know, from that business, which honestly wasn't a lot, right? Cause you're just investing into the business. So you just pay yourself a reasonable salary. And so I'm like burning through cash and just like trying not to spend too much money. And basically I would like go to a coffee shop every day and just like read. Like, through that point, I was like reading my Bible. Like, I was like so depressed. And like, honestly, that was like a big season for me of just like rebuilding my spirit. Right. And like, just getting, just being encouraged. And like, just kind of like, I got healthy. Like, I lost like 20 pounds in like 4 months and like, just like rebuilding, you know, myself as Josh, not just, you know, Josh, the successful entrepreneur, you know, kid entrepreneur scaling to 10 million total revenue or whatever, but Josh just as myself, you know. I think that's a big lesson too, is just like not having your identity built into your business, but just being, having your identity just for who you are.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. And I feel like you kind of like had to like go through a shit ton just to like get there. Like, basically 4 months of like bankruptcy bootcamp of just like going out, getting trim, reading about God, like getting your mind right. I was going to joke and say like, can't work for 4 months kind of sounds like the perfect time to start a podcast, but honestly, I think what you do is probably more useful for your time.
Yeah. I was so burnt out at that point too, that it was just brutal. But yeah, so after that 4 months though, I actually took a job with a company called Groove Life. And so Groove Life, they make silicone wedding rings, Apple Watch bands. You might've seen their Kickstarter. But basically I became their director of growth and eventually their VP of growth. And that was really fun for me, because I got to like, it was kind of a season for stabilization, right? And mentorship, where I got a lot of great just training from the CEO, Peter Goodwin, and then also their CMO, Bryant Garvin. And both those, I mean, I was helping manage about $1 million a month in ad spend at that company. And so it was a good rebuilding season for me, you know, professionally, but also just personally. Like, I got engaged and married through that season. Until 2021, last January, I launched Align Growth and started to run my own agency again.
Did that come out of working at Groove and, you know, maybe kind of seeing where some of the opportunities were coming and where you saw the industry heading? Or did you know going into Groove that you weren't going to be a full-time employee forever?
Yeah, I never thought that I would be there more than more than 2 years. I thought I might make it to 2 years, but at a year and a half, I kind of started just being like, I got to get out of here. They really wanted me to become more of a project manager kind of role. And I'm like, guys, I hate Asana. I hate Monday.com. I can't do this. And so really just kind of had already been freelancing on the side. And I just knew that I wanted to build my own thing. And so they kind of had that expectation too, that I would leave eventually. So it was a good leave.
Was the freelancing stuff very similar to the agency work and just kind of scaled that out?
Yep. So a lot of just paid management is kind of what it started out as. So in 2021, we were doing a lot of paid management and email marketing. And so it wasn't until late 2021, we really started to scale up the influencer side, which is taking up, you know, a majority of our revenue now. In terms of like launching and scaling those influencer programs, just because it's such a great solution for a lot of the iOS 14 problems that people are experiencing, not getting the right creative, not getting enough organic traffic to the store, and helping them either A, teaching them in-house how to do that, or B, you know, doing that on a done for you basis and scaling that up in 90 days.
Okay. So like a disclaimer going into this, like if you want to go and work with influencers and leverage Josh's connections like from day one, just hire Josh. Like that's step number one. But like, let's say that you're talking right now to the broke college kid who just wants to go and like sling fanny packs on the internet and drop ship them from China, and like they can't pay you necessarily for like your retainer, right? Like what's the quick and easy framework and playbook to go and get up and running with influencers early on for someone like that?
Yeah, for sure. So you know, if I were in their shoes, first thing I would do is sign up for TikTok Creator Marketplace. It's an amazing tool where you can sign TikTok influencers for either a paid partnership or just for free product. And so right now on TikTok, you can't actually message anyone through DMs unless they're following you. But Creator Marketplace allows you to build campaigns and do outreach to 100 influencers a week. And from there, you can actually get creative. And you can also start to white label their pages to where you can run their ads. You can run ads through their page. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Just last week, we signed a TikTok influencer with 1 million followers in exchange for free product. And so a lot of the influencers on Instagram right now, you know, they've kind of matured and they're like, you know, like we got a message the same week, you know, it's going to be $5,000. For an Instagram reel, and they only had 20,000 followers. It's just like kind of insane. And so my advice is really you have to increase your volume of outreach to be able to find those types of creators that are willing to work on a free basis with the hopes of doing a paid basis in the future.
And what does that actual engagement request look like? Is it say like, are you giving them a script of what to say? Or is it, hey, here's a free product, do anything, do one video? Or what does the actual kind of pitch look like?
Yeah. So it's basically a collaboration on some creative. They're like, hey, we want to send you free product and we'd love to see what you do with it. And then, you know, based off that, you know, eventually evolve them into a paid partnership. And so that's what we like to do. We actually want to sign, our goal is to sign 100 influencers in 90 days. And then out of those, 10 to 15 of those are going to be great. The other ones might not be that awesome. And so the winners you want to put on some type of retainer or some type of longer term partnership where they're making content for you. Because at the end of the day, most creators want one of two things. They want a long-term partnership and they want consistent income. And so if you can kind of paint that picture for them in the future, that's how we see brands winning in 2022. But back on that paid partnership or the free partnership, yes, we give them kind of guidelines. It's not an exact script. We'll give them like 3 or 4 examples of intros that have worked well in the past. Also other creatives that worked well in the past and maybe some benefits of the product. But from there, they have a lot of like creative freedom. We're just there to kind of help with some guardrails.
And it's definitely a numbers game though, right? Because it seems like you're not, I don't know, you're just kind of spraying, hitting as many influencers as possible and then seeing which ones work. So you said it's probably what, was that 13% or 20% is kind of what you aim for as like a successful conversion to finding someone that works really well?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I don't know if I have a conversion number on that. Like, but what we see is we'll do outreach to 200 people a week, and we generally see a 10 to 20% acceptance rate.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, acceptance rate. Okay.
Acceptance rate of like, yes, I'll do this for free product. We've seen it on a higher end for like brands that have been around for a while. So like some of the brands that we're working with are spending $30,000 to $40,000 a day on ads. And so they have a lot of brand equity and they're like, yes, I would love to receive your product and I'd love to work with you. And like their acceptance rate's at like 40%. Like it's crazy. And so that's kind of like the rate that we track really is that. And then further down the funnel is just who is posting.
This might be like too nitty gritty of a question, but like, are you physically reaching out from that brand's company account, or do you guys set up kind of like a burner outreach account for it?
We set it up through the brand's email account primarily.
Well, yep. And sorry, this is all TikTok we're talking about, right? Or we're talking about like Instagram too?
So for Instagram, we do email primarily, and then TikTok, we start in Creator Marketplace and eventually move them into a hub where we manage that relationship.
Gotcha. Okay. So for example, like you find somebody on Instagram that you like, that you think would be good, rather than DMing them on Instagram, you like hope that you can find their email somewhere else off of Instagram.
Yeah. So we use a bunch of different tools for that. And so that's something that we teach people how to do in-house. It's just like how to get that email. Also like making sure to verify that email so that you're not going to get a bunch of spam. And then doing the partnership through email and then inviting them to apply to your influencer program.
What's the best way for a business to make the decision on, you know, in-house versus outsourcing a lot of the stuff?
That's a good question. And honestly, it's kind of interesting because we work with some really big brands that prefer to outsource, right? And so like, I think it really depends on what the needs of the team are. Are you trying to build out like a really large marketing department in-house? And you want to enable your people to run everything? Or are you just looking to get the result and you don't want to have to manage the team? And so, you know, we work with both. Sometimes we'll launch their program in 90 days and then we'll just show them, you know, hey, this is how you can do it in-house if you'd like to. But yeah, I think it just depends on like what you're trying to build, right? It's like, you know, if you have capacity, awesome. We can help teach your team in-house how to do this same process, or if you don't have capacity, you know, we can help run that program for you.
And do you have a typical size of companies that you work with? I'm assuming it sounds like they're a little bit bigger than, I don't know, your standard e-commerce store.
Yeah. So, I mean, on a done 40 basis, you know, usually that's at least doing at least 3 mil a year for e-com stores and above. And then, you know, on the done, it's actually, I feel like a lot of the smaller brands are wanting to do it in-house because they just don't want to have to continue to pay us for like, because we do it by quarterly. So it's like a 90-day sprint almost. And so, you know, usually under that 2 to 3 million mark in that range, they'll want to keep that in-house.
I feel like that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense too. But like when you say like there could be an in-house, how do you make money off that? Are you selling them a course?
Yeah. So what we're actually doing is coaching them each week on like 7 stages. So we actually have 7 steps to get that influencer program built and scaled. Mm-hmm. And so inside that process, you know, we have templates like inside Notion, we have outreach strategies. We're showing them the tech stack, all that fun stuff and helping them customize their program. And so we're sending them training every Monday inside Notion. And then we actually have a call every week where we're helping coach them through any kinks in the road.
That's a smart model. I feel like we had on Max Binda a couple weeks or months back now at this point, and he was talking about how a lot of agencies are going to start kind of shifting over from this do it for you model to a productized service. And it sounds like this is like 80 to 90% of the way there towards this productized service, where like you're basically saying, hey, listen, like we're not jumping in the weeds, we're not doing all of this work, but like we have this framework, we laid it out for like the next 90 days so you can follow it, and we will jump on a grand total of like 12 1-hour long calls with you and just send you the materials. Is that like roughly how you think about it?
Yeah, exactly. We're basically sending them all the training that they need, they're just executing on that process versus us doing the work. Because if you already have the action steps, then it's just really a matter of like execution. A lot of times people do need the accountability to get there, right? So how many courses have you bought that are just sitting on the back end that like you've never executed on, right? Like I feel like I have like 10 that I'm sitting on that I've only watched like the first intro video.
Like every course I've ever bought ever.
Yeah, exactly. And so part of this is the accountability.
Including college.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the accountability. And like, even if a founder comes to us and they have someone running their organic social that they want to run the influencer program, then we'll teach that person on their team how to execute this process. And even that accountability is awesome because you're going to get it set up in 90 days.
How are you viewing that from, you know, your business and trying to scale that out? Is that, I guess you probably give and takes in terms of the amount of work that's required for that versus what you charge. Is it a goal to kind of grow out both of these segments equally, or are you kind of heavily focusing on one more than the other?
I'm really focusing on that service. So we're naming it the Influencer Roadmap. And so I'm just focused on that because it's a lot more scalable because it doesn't scale my team's time. And I never set out to start an 8-figure agency. You know, like I don't want, you know, 20 or 30 employees working for me and the churn and burn that just comes with taking on e-commerce brands specifically. And so like for me, I think my agency is much more of a lifestyle play where we work with like really big brands on a done for you basis and smaller brands on a done with you basis. And so, yeah, that's just kind of like how I've always wanted to operate. And so this has actually allowed me to like figure out how I can actually scale my revenue without scaling my time.
Back in, I'm going to get the year wrong here, but like it was like 2018 when you were running everything with Waiting Comforts, you got Forbes 30 under 30. And I know like sometimes vanity metric, other times, like it's just like, it's a cool thing to have. I get that. And like, it kind of adds some clout. I'm curious though, like what comes from that, right? Like, have you had opportunities that have literally come from that? Cause I think people on Twitter like to like mess with it a little bit. Cause
not a lot. It's really funny.
But I get it from both perspectives. Like, I'm curious though, I feel like people on Twitter like to like mess with it, but I would guess at a large scale, you probably got a ton of sick opportunities from it. Like, was it worth it? Did you like, have you have a ton of people reaching out as a result of it all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't had a lot of people like reach out necessarily. I think it's just a built-in trust factor with people. It's kind of like one of those things that you have on your bio when you get introduced to speak at some point. You have that as kind of like a trust factor. But like one story I can share really quick is like, I was at my friend's wedding and I was like talking to her dad at the wedding. And like, it was actually when I was running the Weighted Blanket Company. And I was like, yeah, I do this thing where I sell like these heavy blankets on the internet. And it just kind of sounds like I'm like sitting on my parents' couch and like not doing anything cool. And then he wasn't like really listening to me or whatever, just obviously didn't respect what I was doing. And then my wife came over and he was like, yeah, he just hit the Forbes 30 under 30 list or whatever. Just kind of like a, you know, funny, just truth bomb.
Yeah.
He's like, no way. Congratulations. And he started like talking.
And then all of a sudden cares a lot.
Yeah. Work ethic and stuff. So like, I think that there's some trust built in, but I wouldn't say that it's going to be your saving grace and have all this opportunity once you hit it.
That's a fair point. I'm not, not even as a saving grace. I just like, I would expect, honestly, like when it gets published, like probably a lot of outreach and like credibility definitely comes from it. So that makes sense.
Yeah. And I bet it's probably better if you're like on a service business at the time. Cause when I was just running my own company, it's kind of like, you know, whatever, like most of the stuff inbound that I got was just not relevant to me, but maybe if you're an agency, it probably would help.
Josh, this is cool, man. I'm glad we got to riff, got to tell your story. If people want to go and check you out, where can they go and find you?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to come on Twitter, that's where I do the most damage, is at Josh J. Durham at Twitter. And if you'd like to come check out some of our work, go to aligngrowthmanagement.com.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.